Name Nalini.
Nalini.
Name Nalini.
Nase.
The two nostrils.
Gandaha.
Aroma.
Sorava.
Sorava fragrance.
Achute
is called.
Ranaha,
the sense of smell.
Avadutaha,
called Avaduta.
Mukya,
called Mukya,
principle.
Asyam,
the mouth.
Vipanaha,
named Vipana.
Vak,
the faculty of speech.
Rasavit,
a name
Rasadhya.
That means expert in tasting.
Rasaha,
the sense of taste.
The translation.
The two doors named Nalini and Nalini should be known as the two nostrils, and the city named Sorava represents aroma. The companion spoken of as Avadhuta is the sense of smell. The door named Mukya is the mouth, and Vipana is the faculty of speech. Rasagya is the sense of taste. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word Avadhuta means most free. A person is not under the rules of regulations of any injunction when he has attained the stage of Avadhuta. In other words, he can act as he likes. This Avadhuta stage is exactly like air, which does not care for any obstruction. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter, text 34, it is said, Chanchalam himanaha krishna pramati balabhadyutam tashaham vibraham marye vayori vashadushkaram. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it seems to me, more difficult than controlling the wind. Just as the air or wind cannot be checked by anyone, the two nostrils situated in one place enjoy the sense of smell without impediment. When the tongue is present, the mouth continually tastes all kinds of relishable foodstuffs. So, Nalini, Nalini, Nase, Gunda, Sarava, Uchite. Rano Vatuto Mukyasyam Vipido Vagrasa Vid Rasaha Omganati Vrenda Shah Gananjana Shvatya Chakshur Unmititam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Maha. So this word Avadhuta is actually quite interesting. There is someone in our disciplic succession who is known as Avadhuta Shiromani. Does anyone know who that is? That's Nityananda Prabhu. And the reason he's called Avadhuta is, as Prabhupada said first of all here, that he's not subject to any rules and regulations. For example, when you first hear about Lord Nityananda in the Chaitanya Mangala, Chaitanya Bhagavad, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nityananda is referred to as Nityananda Gosai. And then, after some time, we find Lord Nityananda Gosai means Goswami. Lord Nityananda is getting married to two wives, Vasudha and Janava, and he has a child. So, he definitely doesn't act according to the Varnashram Dharma. And there's stories about Lord Nityananda preaching Krishna consciousness and wearing all sorts of jewelry. And so much so, of course, his wearing jewelry, you have to understand that everything Lord Nityananda does, it's not under the influence of the material energy. Just like if I start to wear jewelry, it'd probably be under the influence of the material energy. Probably be pretty weird too. You know? If you see me coming one day with earrings on and, you know, different rings at each finger like that, that's pretty weird. So, but Lord Nityananda, when he wore jewelry, it was to engage people in Krishna consciousness. Now, you may say, how can wearing jewelry engage people in Krishna consciousness? The ladies are very interested in this. So they can wear a lot of jewelry and engage people. No, they won't engage people in Krishna consciousness, they'll engage people in bodily consciousness. But anyway, so Lord Nityananda, he wore jewelry so he could attract thieves. Generally, we don't like to attract thieves. Just like that story of Sanatana Goswami, where he was escaping from prison and he had 8 gold coins, or servants had 8 gold coins. And not only did they attract thieves, but the hotel keeper was going to kill them for that, for those 8 gold coins. And eventually, what happened is that Sanatana Goswami gave the gold coins away to the hotel keeper. Of course, the servant kept one of the gold coins. And then he felt much freer because there were no thieves going to be attracted by that. And Sanatana Goswami, of course, exhibited extreme renunciation even when he had a nice chata. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated that he wanted it given away, and he exchanged that nice chata for just like a piece of torn cloth with a Muslim mendicant. So generally this is the way it works. But Lord Nityananda, anyway, getting back to the story, was wearing jewelry, and he was having kirtan every night in the house of Nandanacharya in Navadvip. And thieves started to notice it. And there was one head thief, and the boss of the thieves, the thief Mahanta. So, and he was thinking, let's plan on stealing these jewels. So they made a plan to steal the jewels, and they got so excited that they actually were so excited they wore themselves out and they fell asleep before they could steal. Which is kind of interesting. And so they thought, well, the next night we're going to worship the goddess Chandi. Let's do it. And get empowered to steal. So they worshiped the goddess Chandi, and then the next night they came to steal the jewelry from Lord Nityananda. They were outside the house. They just saw these big, big Vaikuntha guards guarding the house. And these Vaikuntha guards were like 3 meters high or something like that. They were really tall people. And there, the Vaikuntha guards were chanting Hare Krishna like that. And they said, well, tonight's not the night, let's wait a little while. So they waited a few days, worshipped the goddess Chandi again. And they came back a third time, and this time it started to rain, like pus and blood, interesting stuff from the sky. And it was very dark, and they fell into ditches, and they were eaten or got bitten by the worms and the scorpions and everything like that. And they became blind. And eventually they realized they made a big mistake. So sometimes it's required to get really smashed before you're ready to surrender. I think many of us experience that, right? Say, okay, I guess we made a mistake, we better surrender to Krishna. So then they had to surrender to Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda accepted him like that. And Lord Nityananda, so this was a plan by Lord Nityananda. He acted as an avaduta, like the wind, which means basically not following any rules and regulations, doing all sorts of interesting things, and, you know, sometimes even kicking devotees. Like the time he kicked Shivananda Sen. It was interesting, because what happened is that Shivananda Sen had to stay back while they were on their way to Jagannath Puri to pay some tolls. And he was supposed to take care of Lord Nityananda, and there wasn't any prasadam arranged for Lord Nityananda or a place to stay. And Lord Nityananda got so angry that he cursed, you know, Shivananda Sen's son to die. Can you imagine that? You think, what kind of god is that? You know, he's angry because he's hungry. He said, I'm hungry. You know, most of us, we do get angry if we're hungry because the blood sugar goes down, right? But Lord Nityananda doesn't get angry because his blood sugar goes down. It's like, you know, I know when I'm going to talk to a devotee about something serious, I talk to them after they eat prasad, not before they eat. Because then after they eat prasad, they're in a much better mood to talk to us. So anyway, so Lord Nityananda gets so angry that he basically cursed Sivananda Sen's son. And when Sivananda Sen came, he kicked Sivananda Sen. And so even Sivananda Sen's nephew, Srikanth, was very upset and was going to place a complaint before Lord Chaitanya. But he didn't actually place that complaint. So this is, you know, this is really Avadutta stuff. But of course, Sivananda Sen became ecstatic when he was kicked by Lord Nityananda, as I hope any of us would. When you're kicked by the Lord, you get the mercy of the Lord's lotus feet, isn't it? Or chastised or kicked by the Lord. So this is actually quite wonderful. So he was in ecstasy, and Lord Nityananda gave him special mercy because of that. So there's so many instances I can talk about with Lord Nityananda, how he exhibited these Avadutta tendencies. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because he's on the absolute spiritual platform. And similarly, pure devotees, sometimes they act as Avadutas. There's this Vamsi Das Babaji, some of you may have heard of him before. And I'm not going to tell the story about him because it's really controversial how he did all these things. So that's Avadutta. But for us, the devotees of Krishna, or the aspiring devotees of Krishna, actually we shouldn't even think that we're devotees, we should think we're aspiring to be devotees of Krishna. We have to follow the rules and regulations very strictly. Why is this? Because we have not realized our dharma yet. Now, let's talk about dharma. I mean, we're very attached to the senses here. And the senses, some of these senses are being described here, you know, the faculty of speech, the faculty of smelling, the faculty of speaking, as we were quoting from the Prashadam verse yesterday, that, you know, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable of all the senses. So we have to be very careful to act according to the rules and regulations, because we don't know what our dharma is. And then the word dharma is actually quite interesting. Because it can be used in different contexts. Sometimes it can be used in the context of, you know, what's your dharma? Well, to take care of my family. That's true. It is your duty. It can be used in the context meaning duty rather than the inherent quality of a thing. So let's talk about some more fancy words in Sanskrit to press you all. There's this word in Sanskrit called vastu. And vastu means substance, basically. That's how it literally translates, substance. So we know from the Bhagavad Gita that the substances that are not eternal in their form are considered unreal. Anasato vijate bhavo nabhavo vijate sataha upayorapi drishtavantas tvanias tatvadarshati. Famous verse in Bhagavad Gita that says, the sages think or sing. Those things that continue to exist, they're real, and those things that don't continue to exist, they're unreal, in the sense they change shape. They're, the substance of which they're made is real, but the actual thing that that we perceive is unreal because it's changing. Just like there's this Heraclitus, some of you may have heard him, he's from Europe also. He's from Greece. He had this statement. He said, you cannot step into the same river twice. Because the river is always flowing. You know, so that's, and of course, Krishna talks about this in terms of time in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, kalo asmi, I am time. So the time is actually flowing and destroying everything. You know, mitru sarva rasaham, everybody's dying. And everything's changing by the action of time. You know, erosion is one of the things that occurs through the action of time. Even the stones become eroded. So we see these temporary things are called, we talked about Vastu means the substance. This is in Sanskrit, the temporary or perceiving something that's permanent when it's actually temporary is called avastava vastu. Anyway, there's a word. Avastava vastu. Anyone's heard that expression before? No. Anyway, a little technical stuff for you. You don't have to remember it at the time of death, don't worry. You know, Krishna says, you know, what is temporary substance? What's this technical word for temporary substance? You say, I don't remember, Krishna. Well, take another birth. These things are not required. All you're required to do at the time of birth is chant Hare Krishna purely and love Krishna. So, but anyway, philosophy is good to help us control the mind. So that means perceiving something that's unreal as real, basically. And so let's get back to the principle of dharma. Dharma means the essential quality of a thing. And sometimes due to contact with something else, the dharma of an object becomes apparently changed, not actually changed. And I'm, of course, I'm referring to the soul. But let me give a material example. The dharma of water is what? Liquid. So when water is here in Slovenia, is exposed to the air in the winter, it becomes solid, right? I mean, just like I'm seeing solid water on the roof over there, that is called snow. So the snow or the ice is not the dharma of water. But because it's come in contact with something else, it exhibits something that is not as dharma, and another Sanskrit word is namatika dharma, or yeah, untemporary dharma. There's nitya dharma. Nitya dharma means the eternal quality of things. Of course, you know, water talking about eternal, but anyway, so in this, using this particular metaphor, the actual quality of water is wet, you know, liquid. And the anicca dharma, or namitika dharma, as the statement may go, then is solid because it's come in contact with something else. So the same way with the soul. So because the soul is come in contact with this material energy, it exhibits qualities which are not its constitutional nature. It's quite interesting, at least for me it's interesting. So the qualities that we're exhibiting, you know, like love, you know, wonderful qualities like lust, anger, greed, illusion and attachment, false ego, all these things, fear even, you know, kama, krodha, madamatsarya, bhavya, they're all due to contact with the material energy. And of course, Krishna the Gita says this. Can anyone remember what verse? No. Karnam gunasangasya sadasa jadma jamanishu. Actually, Gita is so important. All these different points are actually proven in the Gita. If you learn the Gita, you know the whole philosophy. The sambandha abhideya and prayojana is in the Gita. It's not just sambandha and abhideya. Prayojana is also there if you actually know the Gita well. So, karanam guna sangasya, the cause is guna sangha. That means, sangha means association, like we have satsangha, association with devotees, and guna sangha is association with the modes of nature. So, when we have bad association, then we exhibit qualities that are not our nature. In other words, you know, when you're associating with people in the mode of ignorance, or food in the mode of ignorance, or passion, or faith in goodness, or anything, music in the mode of passion, goodness, ignorance, or any of these things. Krishna spends a lot of time, there's several chapters in the Bhagavad Gita that deal with different things in different modes of nature. There's religion in different modes of nature, there's a determination in different modes of nature, there's workers in different modes of nature, there's renunciation in different modes of nature. It's quite interesting. You basically have almost three chapters dedicated to describing the modes of nature, probably even more than that. You know, the 17th, a lot of the 18th chapters dedicated to that. So that's Guna Sunda. So that's why Lord Chaitanya said when he was asked, what is the quality of a Vaishnava? He said, a satsanga chara, a Vaishnava chara. The first quality is, you know, give up Guna Sangha, or give up a satsanga. A satsanga means temporary association. Temporary association means material nature. And then, of course, then sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. Sarva sastra koi. So sadhu, we get the word sadhu from sat, you know, eternal association, sadhu sangha. So you get perfection by the right association, because then you regain your eternal nature. And of course, that right association also means the holy names, you know. That's why we talk about Ketra Bhakti Maharajanam Baba Mahadbhakti Nirbhavanam. By chanting the Lord's holy names, the dust in the heart or the dirt in the heart becomes cleansed, and one revives one's own nature, because that's your eternal nature. The nature is there. Or like Prabhupada said, becoming Krishna conscious, becoming Krishna conscious is like waking up. You know, the sound vibration is compared to the alarm clock that wakes you up in the morning, or nowadays they use alarm mobile phones. That's what I do anyway. So it wakes you up in the morning, and then you somehow or other remember, or it's a natural state. It's not, or another expression Prabhupada uses, it's not an artificial imposition on the mind, because you wake up. However, here's another caveat. At the same time, you have to be aware of your anicca dharma, because you are functioning in the world. So there's two other words I'm going to teach you today. Paramartika and Vyavaharika. Anyone heard of those words before? No. My lectures, yeah. So Paramartika means transcendental understanding. Who are you? I'm a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. I'm a cow in the spiritual world. You know, that's Paramartika understanding. Or I play accordion in the spiritual world. So, but then Vyavaharika means ordinary understandings of this world. And you have to function on both bases, on both platforms, just to be, because you're not an avaduta. An avaduta doesn't have to function on both platforms. He can just go, Hare Krishna. Like I remember there was one godbrother of Srila Prabhupada's, and it was Krishnadas Babaji. And very wonderful devotee. And he would be visiting us sometimes. And you'd ask him something. You know, normally you go to a sadhu, you ask questions, and you say, my dear sadhu, could you tell me how to solve this problem? And he'd just go, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, you know, Goranga. I said, well, can we be practical for a second? Like what he said, just chant Hare Krishna. And he said, no, give me some practical. So he was like, that's an avaduta. But we have to function on both platforms, you know. So if we're out there in the street and someone asks you, what country are you from, where you were born? And you say to them, I'm an eternal spirit soul. I was never born. I will never die. I was never born. I'm 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. They'll say, we have a doctor you can see. And you'll probably end up in a mental institution, you know, taking some antipsychotic drugs after you say this. So you really have to be on both platforms. But be aware what you're doing when you're doing it. In other words, when you engage in Vyavaharika, it means like ordinary understanding. You know, I'm a Slovenian, I'm male or female. I mean, otherwise, if you didn't do that, you'd have, you know, you'd have the brahmacharis living in the brahmacharini ashram. It wouldn't matter. You know, we're all spirit souls. What a disaster that would be. Because nowadays, actually, nowadays, you know, people are so ignorant, it appears like that, you know. People can't tell the difference between men and women anymore. Because sometimes the mode of ignorance is very similar to the transcendental understanding. You're not going to motivate ignorance, nothing disturbs you, you don't feel pain or pleasure or happiness or distress. Because you're drunk. You don't feel as cold outside. So anyway, so we do have to function on both platforms. You know, and relate to people and not appear like crazy people in the street like avadutas, so we can preach Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, internally, you know, we have to have this, so we have to have almost like a split personality. That internally something's going on and externally something else is going on, just to function in society and carry out Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And when we do that, then the senses can come under control, because that's called yukta vairagya, engaging the senses in Krishna's service. But it has to be done with a higher understanding. Yukta vairagya, engaging the senses in Krishna's service without proper understanding, that's a jata sukriti. You know, you're still making some advancement, you know, some benefit to that. But we're meant to actually cultivate this higher understanding that, yes, I'm acting like this, but it's not actually my real nature, my real dharma. Anyway, so if you're aware of your real dharma all the time, then you can proceed very nicely in Krishna consciousness. So we'll take questions. Little technical stuff this morning. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Yes.
Yeah, could you repeat the two words for transcendental understanding and...
Ordinary understanding is called vyavaharika. Vyavaharika. And it's easy to remember. Paramartika. Para means like transcendental. Paramartika, understanding, is both types. So that understanding has to be there. You know, I'm a spirit soul, part of ourselves, Krishna. Ultimately, you know, the Dharma is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jivera Svarupahoy Nitya Krishna. That's my eternal nature. That nature is always there. Remember, it's always there. It's not an artificial imposition. You were never born. It's not given to you. I mean, sometimes people ask the question, well, then why do we have to get the Bhakti Lata Bij? It is our inheritance. I mean, I've had that question asked many times. But the Bhakti Lata Bij doesn't change your nature and give you something you don't have. It awakens your nature. So in essence, you actually have that devotion as part of your nature. But it's covered up. And when the spiritual master plants Brahmanda Brahmate Konda Bhavyuanji Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij, that was the verse I referred to in English last night. That the living entity is wandering everywhere and somehow or other comes in contact with a pure devotee who gives him the creep or a seed of devotion. I mean, it's like that happened to me just while I was listening to the radio. You know, I didn't even know what was happening. I was listening to the radio, hearing the top 10 songs of the day. You know, top 10 songs. You have that here? You don't. The radio doesn't say, well, this is the most popular song of the day, and then every week it changes. So I was listening to the radio and thinking, you know, of course it was folk songs. It wasn't bad like your songs nowadays. It wasn't like punk or junk or whatever. It was like, you know, the Beatles and nice stuff. So I was listening to it, and then all of a sudden, on the radio, this voice comes out playing this album, which is called the Happening Album, which is Srila Prabhupada's first album. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oof, like you like the bees. And then something awakened in my heart. And I became attracted to it. I didn't know what it was. I became attracted to it, and then somehow or other I was able to record it later on. I kept listening. I became so enthusiastic, I kept listening to the radio for more hours a day just to catch that song again. Even though I usually didn't listen to the radio that much. I mean, I really wasn't that much into it. But I just kept it on all day long as I was doing my schoolwork and everything. Because when are they going to play that song? When I had my tape recorder ready. Those days they had tape recorders. It was before MP3s and all that other nice stuff was invented. So I just kept it on all day long, ready to push the button. And as soon as it came on, I pushed the button, I recorded it. And then I listened to it over and over again. So that's how the Bhakti Lata Beej became planted in my heart, despite it. So that's why the devotees go out and Harinam. Because you're planting these seeds of devotion in people's hearts. You're awakening to their real constitutional nature. Like Lord Chaitanya said, Jeev Jago, I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, who is portraying what Lord Chaitanya is saying. Jeev Jago Gorachandu Bole, Kota Nidraya, all Maya Pisachira Kole. How long have you been sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya? Wake up, you Jiva souls! Wake up! And of course, Udi Laurana Purava Bhagat, when Lord Chaitanya would go out in the morning, he would go to the still sleeping villagers and and say, wake up, you know, same thing. Both of these are wake up songs. Jeev Jago and Udi Laurana. Actually, they're parts of Runadaya Kirtan, or the same Kirtan, written by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So that's the Bhakti Lata Beej, and that wakes us up to our real nature. Like in the morning, we wake up, and sometimes it takes a few minutes to remember where we are. I give an example sometimes. When I'm traveling and I wake up in the morning, sometimes it takes me a few minutes to figure out where the door is. Because you're traveling, you know, traveling all the time. Where am I? Where am I? And, you know, fortunately I haven't walked out the window. Sometimes I've actually walked into furniture. If it's dark. If it's dark, so now I've taken to sleeping with a flashlight. So, because you don't remember. But as soon as you remember, you wake up, hey, I'm in Slovenia. And it's cold outside. So that's the process of Krishna consciousness. It's your dharma, your nitya dharma is there. And then it goes to higher levels when you realize who you are in the spiritual world. Because that's also there. Your spiritual identity is also there. It's just covered up. You just can't see it. And so it's not something artificial that someone will come up to you and say, hey, you're this or you're that. You will realize it. And Prabhupada's process for realizing it was not that you just sit in some grove in Vrindavan, but you actually preach Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada said, deserve, then desire. And then Krishna and Prabhupada and your spiritual master will reveal it to you. It happens like that. That's actually a higher method, you know, because you got Goshtananandis and Bhajananandis. There's another two words, which I think you've heard before. Goshtananandis are those people who preach, and Bhajananandis are those who try to realize their spiritual identity just by sitting in one place and chanting. But in this day and age, the methodology is Goshtananandi. Where you go out and preach, and then Krishna will reveal it. You'll get, here's another fancy word for you, you'll get a spurti. Of the spiritual world. Anyone know what that word means? No? It means a manifestation of the spiritual world. You'll actually be there on Sankirtan, and then you'll realize, hey, you know, you see the reality behind things. The reality underneath the surface, and you'll see the actual Vrindavan. It's like I was thinking this morning about this temple here, that, you know, there's a surface way of seeing the temple. You walk in, it's cold. See if I can say that. You walk in, it's cold. And then you go underneath the surface, and it's actually non-different from Navadvip here. I had a realization this morning. I said, this is Navadvip. It's non-different from Navadvip in India. Because, I mean, Pachitapa is here, the devotees are chanting the glories of the holy name. I mean, what's... So it's like that. Like Prabhupada said, even the holy dham, like Navadvip or Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, is covered by a layer of yogamaya. So people see the layer. They don't actually see what's underneath. So you go to Vrindavan and you see a bunch of pigs and monkeys. You know, monkeys steal your glasses. And they can, even if you're not careful, they pass urine on your head when you go under the tree. That's happened to a lot of devotees. I tell the devotees, don't walk under a tree that has a monkey in it. I say, why? Do you experience it? They said, well, it's raining. I'm raining. The monkey giving you his blessings. So people go to Vrindavan. It's happened to a lot of devotees. It's not just something that... So you go to Vrindavan and you see all these things. So dirt, dual in the street, you know, the dacoits of thieves, the pundits trying to take your money, and noise and honking and all that other stuff. But actually underneath there's something else. But that Yogamaya keeps people who don't have the right attitude from seeing the real Vrindavan. So the same thing with this temple. There's something going on underneath that you all don't see. And that is Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Because this is not different from Navadvip, from Mayapur, Sri Mayapur now. I mean, Panchatabha is there. It's amazing. It's amazing you have Panchatabha here. I remember when I first came here, Panchatabha wasn't on the altar. Gornatai was here. And Panchatabha was upstairs, and they were painting Panchatabha, getting ready. I think it was Tatpurusha's wife was working. Isn't that right? He wasn't a painting by Panchatabha. He was brought down on the altar. Anyway, you're all blessed by Panchatabha here. So any other questions or comments? Yes. Oh, yes. Well, we have the eternal swoop, just like the eternal swoop of water is liquid. Not exactly eternal, but anyway, just using the metaphor. And so we're in contact, so we're manifesting a swarupa, a rupa, let's say rupa, not really swarupa, rupa means form, that has nothing to do with our eternal form in the spiritual world. Because we're in contact with something that transforms our understanding or covers our understanding of the real nature. But there's a real swarupa there, a real form that's... I mean, there's other examples you can give about being covered up, like the clouds. Prabhupada said, you know, cover the sun. The sun is not actually covered by the clouds. You're the one who's covered by the clouds. Or if you have, like... Another example I use sometimes is when I was young, I would go to these places that had a lot of mirrors, funhouse mirrors. You ever been to these places? Where you have the mirrors that just like make you look like you're big and fat, mirrors that look like you're skinny, mirrors that make you look like tiny. You go in front of these mirrors and you just see yourself in different ways. So, but if you actually have a real mirror, because the mind is compared to a mirror, the mirror of the mind in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Shastra, then you can actually see yourself in a real way, but it requires cleansing your heart. Or if it's, another example I use, the glasses are dirty, you can't see anything. Sometimes I come out of a very cold place into a warm place, and guess what happens? Glasses fog up, and I can't see anything. So, we're blind right now. And the problem is we're accepting other blind people as leaders. Not in Krishna consciousness, of course, but outside of Krishna consciousness. You know, we accept the scientists or whatever, materialists, leaders. So yeah, it's there. You just have to wake up. If you wake up, you'll see it. You'll see your spiritual form. You'll see who you are. You'll see what your service is in the spiritual world. You'll see who your friends are in the spiritual world. That's pretty nice, isn't it? It's just a question of waking up. We're sleeping now. Even in Bhagavatam, bless her sleep. That's a favorite place to sleep for the devotees. Prabhupada one time was giving Bhagavatam class and everyone was sleeping because they were up the whole night preparing for his arrival. And then Prabhupada looked around and he said, this movement is going on only by Krishna's mercy. Because obviously, you know, how else is it going to go on everyone? Another time Prabhupada was in the airplane and all the devotees were And Prabhupada said, everyone else is awake except for the devotees. Of course, just to give the devotees an excuse, is in those days in the movement, we weren't allowed to get more than 5 hours of sleep at night. And, you know, if you slept more than six, you got yelled at for being in the motor vehicle. But now as you get older, you understand, you know, sometimes you have different needs. And you can't really get heavy with people just because they need to take a little more rest. Especially as you get older, you have to be careful not to offend Vaishnavas. I mean, I was just speaking to one devotee in a temple where they were ready to kick out a devotee who had served the temple for like 40 years because the devotee is older and, you know, just can't get up every morning from Mangalarti. You know, I was just speaking last night to some devotees like that. They can't, you know, they have to be a little compassionate. A little compassion. So anyway, so yes, your real spiritual body and identity is there. Is there any other questions? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, confused. I mean, it won't be called ISKCON. I can tell you that. But it'll mean that we have a group. There's different groups of devotees. It's not to say that everyone will have the same rasa, that, you know, just because I'm a cow, you're all going to be cows. In the don't want my disciples to be cows. Another. It's actually described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that whatever rasa is in, then you perceive your spiritual master guiding you in that particular rasa. In the same rasa. Technical like that. So, yes, Prabhupada said we'll all go back to the spiritual world, he said, except for Mr. Nair. Mr. Nair was the person who tried to take back the Bombay property. He sold us the property, tried to take it back and make money for us. Prabhupada said everyone will go back except for him. And by Prabhupada's mercy, I think ultimately he'll go back too. So that means we'll be with each other, which is nice. You won't look the same. You know, I won't be sitting on the high seat lording it over everybody else, but I'll have to serve there. So, I don't know if I'm looking forward to that. But anyway, so, you know, everyone will have to be a humble servant there in the spiritual world. No sannyasis. You know, everybody's just, I mean, there's brahmacharis there. And one aspect of the spiritual world is Navadvipa. And those brahmacharis and grahasas and everything there in Navadvipa. And I'm sure there's some sannyasis too. But it's but we'll all be together. But it's not so much that we're going to remember like that. It's not that I'm going to say, hey, is that you, Dharma? You know, what are you doing as a gopi? It's not exactly like that. But, you know, there's some remembrance. I mean, even in this life, we do have some remembrance of people that we've met, at least spiritually in previous lives. I mean, one of the first times I was in the temple and worshiping Tulsi Devi, and there was some remembrance that came back. Hey, I've been doing this before. I'm sure we've all experienced this sort of like deja vu type of experience in Krishna consciousness. Or when we meet someone, a devotee, you know, we've known that devotee from done devotional services in past life. I mean, some of us experience that. We do that in the past life. So there's some recognition like that. So the spiritual world, yes, we'll be together. If we go back, we have a. This is a funny song from the 1960s. If you go to heaven before I do, just drill a hole and pull me through. So anyway, because we'll want to bring our friends back. That's nice, isn't it? Because if one of us goes back, hopefully one, and then we'll just say, hey, what about my friends? It's like Dhruva Maharaj did the same thing, right? Now, Dhruva Maharaj was getting ready to get on the Vaikuntha airplane. He said, "Hey, what about my mother?" I said, "Don't worry. She's in another airplane. We didn't have room in this one for her." And then, so that's the advantage of being in the society. And then Prabhupada. Prabhupada is very merciful. Prabhupada said, you know, even if you don't remember Krishna, at the time of death, Krishna will remember you. So that's the advantage of being connected to Prabhupada. I mean, you get some really special mercy. So anyway, we'll all be together. How's that? That's nice, isn't it? Because I wouldn't want to leave you all. I don't want to come back to Slovenia in my next life. At least in the winter. So, any other questions? Yeah, we have a lot of questions. Yeah.
What's the most important aspect of sadhusanga, and what would be the appropriate way of associating with sadhus in holy dhamma, like in India, in women's body?
Well, the first thing is to offer respects. I mean, if you read the literature, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur especially, about, he writes a lot about how people, sadhus and devotees, they relate to each other. I mean, right now, I mean, a lot of the stuff we're talking about is actually coming from the Jiva Dharma, because I'm doing this study to prepare a course for the Jiva Dharma, which is an extensive work by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It deals with Vaishnava relationships. It deals with sambandha, videya, prayojana, different tapas. It's sort of a compilation of all the Goswami's teachings in a story format. Really interesting stuff. So, you know, the way we did, you know, one story I remember right now is that someone, just an aspiring devotee, came up to this great pure devotee, and the great pure devotee offered respects to the aspiring devotee. So there should be this mutual respect between Vaishnavas and, you know, obeisances. So we should be happy. One's not happy to see a Vaishnava, it's an offense. So we should become very happy. Especially the Brajavasis. One has to be very careful dealing with the Brajavasis or the Dambasis in Mayapur and now we. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, "When will I be happy taking the remnants of the untouchables in Mayapur?" You know, there's a song. So, yeah, so there has to be one of respect. And, of course, if someone is not in our line, that means, you know, Prabhupada's line, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's line, we shouldn't really want to hear from them about Krishna consciousness, because we should stick to our line. That's our chastity. I mean, because there's a tendency many people have is just jumping, you know, whatever sort of sadhu attracts you or katha attracts you. It's really not chastity. Chastity means to stick with Prabhupada's line. And we found many devotees end up in difficulty deviating from Krishna consciousness because they don't stick to Prabhupada's line. Not to criticize any of the Vaishnava, but that's our faithfulness of chastity. So, yes, if someone's a follower of Prabhupada, then we were interested in actual followers, then we're actually interested in hearing them. Or, you know, in our disciplic succession, you know, obviously we pass the Acharyas, Bhaktivinoda. But first we have to understand Prabhupada. Bhaktivinoda. Because Prabhupada, we have to see the past Acharyas through Prabhupada. That's really important. Not to jump over the head of Srila Prabhupada. Does that make sense? We have another question back here.
Thank you for the lecture. You mentioned that we live two lives, actually. One is the inner life, connected to Krishna, spiritual, and holy devotees. And then this duty, dharma, to go to work.
Yeah.
If we see, and we should spread some here down there, in a
way. Yeah.
If I see that my superior is manipulating, lying, misusing the inferior colleague.
Yeah. you have some dharma, you have some duty, at least in this world, to try to rectify the situation. If you see something, someone being abused or mistreated or something like that, it's your duty. Even though it's not your eternal duty, but there are, just like we have varnashram, there's duties, like Krishna said to Arjuna, your duty as a kshatriya is to fight. That's nimitta dharma. That means temporary dharma. It's not the eternal dharma, but he had to do it. One has to fulfill his temporary dharma too, just like if, you know, if you have a parent who's sick and they're getting ready to die or something like that, you know, it's your duty as a child to help them.
And if this is the equal point, because then I might have problems with superior.
Yeah, so that you have to balance these things. If any sort of decision making, there has to be prioritizing, which means, you know, if I do this, then not only will that person not get help, but I'm going to get kicked out of a job or something like that. Yeah, anyway, it's not a just discrimination in a situation like that. But, you know, we can't always be preaching direct Krishna consciousness to people because we have different activities we do in this world, unless you're an avaduta. You know, so you have to maintain your body, you have to maintain your family, all these things. You know, it's just, you have to be practical. But dovetail it in Krishna service. But don't identify with it. That's the point. Don't internally identify with that situation. So, any other questions? Quick question? Yes.
You were talking about Bharat Maharaj who fell down because of the beer.
Yeah.
Was Bharat Maharaj at the stage of
Baba?
The stage of Baba?
Yes.
Is this the stage of realizing Paramatma? Is this higher than realizing
Yes, it's higher than realizing Paramatma. But still one can fall down. The only stage that one can't fall down from, where there's absolutely no tendency for an artist, is prema. That's the only stage where there's absolutely no anarchist. At Baba, there are no anarchists, but at prema, there's absolutely no anarchist. There's a difference. No anarchist means it still may come back. Just like you say, there's no dirt in this room, but the dirt may come in unless you're careful. But absolutely means there's no possibility for it. So the prema is the only absolutely secure platform. So therefore, you know, devotional service is like a razor's edge. You've got to be real careful.
And when I will hopefully realize that I'm not the body, will this stage also mean that there will be already some love for Krishna?
Well, it depends on how you realize it. If you're my body, you may not have love for Krishna. But basically, we realize who we are, not what we're not. Devotees oftentimes try to realize what they're not, but that doesn't work. You have to realize who you are. Then automatically, what you're not will be realized. Don't approach it from a negative basis, approach it from a positive basis. Who are you? I'm Krishna's servant. I'm spirit soul. And it's hard to say, to realize you're not the body. I mean, I can't think of how to realize directly you're not the body. Except the, you know, directly realizing you are Krishna's servant, you are a spirit soul, you're full of bliss and knowledge, and automatically, oh, I'm not listening. So, worry about who you are. Be positive. The power of positive thinking. Okay, and I'd have you know it's time for prasadam because we are our bodies. Okay, to divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.